Welcome to the Time Management Podcast with me, your host, Abigail Barnes. I'm a productivity coach, global speaker, time management author, and award-winning entrepreneur on a mission to share the 888 formula with the world and to remind you that it's your time. Leave it to me to bring you new time management tips, tricks, tools, and strategies, to introduce you to guests, research, and case studies from around the world, and to give you a simple five-step process you can follow to up-level your productivity, achieve your goals, and create a life that exceeds your wildest dreams. I'm so excited that you're here, so let's get started. Welcome to the show. I am so excited to be joined today by the amazing Martin Capelli. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And I'm pretty well excited to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation, man.
Who is Martin Capelli in a nutshell?
I'm close to retire. Looking at my career, to start with the professional life, I was in the Navy for 12 years. Finishing up with a certificate of a commanding officer of a submarine in the German Navy. After that, I joined a company selling investment goods. So I was in sales, which was quite exciting time. 30 years ago, I came in touch with the training business, training and consulting and coaching business. Since 13 years, I've been self-employed in this area. I'm married, we have got two kids, and I would say this is the most important part about my life.
What was your relationship like with time back in the day? Obviously, you started your career in the military. So talk us through that, and maybe it starts younger. So love to hear.
When I was younger, time was not an issue for me, not at all. I even didn't think about it, although I was very active in a private initiative at that time when I was something like 16, 17. And I had a fully packed agenda at that time, but that was normal, you know. I mean, you had your appointments, you had to organize things and so on. I would say one thing that always was part of my life was punctuality. It sounds a bit old-fashioned, maybe. However, there was really one point. During Navy time, others took care of my time. So actually, you had your daily plan. And when you were at sea, it was clear we had a two-shift system, which means you were 4 hours on shift and 4 hours off shift. It was pretty clear, well organized. You didn't have to think about it. Then it started to think about it when I was more responsible for myself and my profession. Then there were some wake-up calls concerning time, concerning energy during that time. Then it became interesting, I would say.
Tell us more about these time wake-up calls then. What were they? Because obviously, in the military, I'm imagining you, like previous guests, if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late. You go from the military into a corporate career via a wake-up call or two. So tell us more.
There are sad wake-up calls, and they were very helpful. First of all, my father died at the age of 53 of a heart attack. That was a shock for me. I was around 18 at that time. Why did he have this heart attack? From my point of view, he was over-identified with his job. That was one thing. Second thing was, due to his experience, he had to go to war at the age of 17 during World War II. So he was sent to the Normandy during D-Day. And he, his family, and the family of my mother, they lost everything. They had nothing. And so this was so deep in them, this fear of losing everything again. And that is, I think, which drove my father into that situation. That was one thing. Even worse, a few years later, since then, my mother spends Christmas with us. So I went to her house, took her to our house, and we were in front of our house here. And I just wanted to leave the car. Then my mother looked at me and she said, "You know what? Sometimes I think God was on my side when father died." And I was like, "What?" Closed the door again, but what? And she said to me, "Your father never had time for a coffee. We never had time for a walk together. The work was the one thing, and I am not sure that I could have stand that for a longer time. And that was really a wake-up call for me, because at that time, I swore to myself, I do not want that my wife or my kids ever have to say so because they experience something like that. So that was a real wake-up call. And I know it's a sad story somehow, but there's the good end of it. And that was really, really something very important to me.
Thank you so much for sharing these experiences with us. Every time I have conversations with people, I learn a little bit more about them, and I learn a little bit more about why they are how they are, and also why they are in my life. Martin and I, for the reference of this conversation, Martin and I met a few years ago through a training event, and we have been friends ever since. But hearing this is the first time I've also heard this. Hearing this makes me realize why I resonate so deeply with you. So thank you so much for sharing it. I'm so sorry that you experienced these things, but I can see how they have become the foundation and the core of the work that you do today. And as we unfold this conversation, I know it will become apparent to the listeners how fortunate the clients are that you work with. Your work is the consequence of these situations. Tell us a little bit more about your transition from the military into the work that you then went on to do, and how these life experiences informed the work, the creation of how you do it.
I remember quite well when I left the Navy and started my job in that company. After, let me say, 2 months, I asked myself, why the heck is my sales manager my sales manager? Because I couldn't see anything what I would call leadership or managing people. So there was really, really something like, hey, what the heck does he know about it? Yeah, because during Navy time, the topic of managing people, leading people, being the example, show exemplary behavior was always a very important topic. And suddenly it was more about figures and how you sell yourself, and I'm important. This is what I felt about the sales manager. So at that point of time, I thought, okay, this is not the way I see the world, especially when leading people. Second thing was, when I looked at my colleagues in sales, they talked a lot. And I thought, okay, maybe some of the customers just signed the contract to make them stop talking. Yeah, so it was not about their needs. It was more about we are, we have, we can, we do. These were things I really reflected about a lot. After 4 years, I left that company, and I was lucky to find an international training company. For me, it felt like, okay, hey, this is exactly what I should do. Just a side note here, or a side step, I quit my job, and 3/4 of a year before, we had bought our house. We had 2 little kids. And I quit my job for an uncertain future. And now it might feel like, wow, he's a hero. No, I'm not. It just felt good. It felt like this is it. This is how it started. And as you can see, after almost 30 years in this job, seems to be a good decision we took. So it was not only a decision by myself, but a family decision my wife and I took.
We are going to come back to this career again, as I would love you to tell us more about the work that you've been doing with your clients over the last 30 years. I want to hone in on something that you said about your intuition. You just knew. It is so easy for us, I think it was the late Steve Jobs who said this, to join up the dots looking back. When you're actually in the thick of it, as you said, a new house, 2 children, a wife, and you're not loving what you're doing, there is uncertainty with the next opportunity. What does trusting your intuition, making a decision in the face of overwhelming responsibilities. This is a real one for so many people out there. I can't quit because I have a young family. I can't change because. And then they stay in a job that they don't enjoy for the money and end up burning out, ill, in worse situations. Talk to us about specifically the intuition, trusting your gut, what that actually looks like, means like, feels like for you.
For me, intuition is not something that is in the air somewhere or so. Intuition is learned knowledge. It's deep in us, but it's more like unconsciously, we have got this feeling, hey, this is right. I could follow this at once. On the other hand, and this is what I always do, is rationalize your intuition. Why does it feel so strong? Why do I have this feeling of, yes, I have to act now? What's behind it? And then really come into the pros and cons, as you mentioned already. Second thing for me is, especially when talking about a situation in a job where I do not feel happy, is my motivation now away from something, or is my motivation to go somewhere? For me, it's a huge difference. In this case, talking about my starting point in the training business, it was clearly I want to be part of it. It was going to something, heading for something. These are the two things. Background information, I worked together with the Max Planck Institute for Human Development in Berlin. For those who don't know the Max Planck Institutes in Germany, these are the leading scientific institutes. You have a Max Planck Institute of Physics and so on. They deal a lot with this topic, intuition, and how you can make it practicable, how to deal with it and how to trust your intuition as well. That helped me a lot as well, but that was more in the last 8 years. I didn't know anything about that before, but now I know a little bit more about what I did during that time and how it worked.
What I'm hearing you say there is that over the time you have trusted your intuition, got a result, and now you're in a place where you have the scientific backing to calibrate your decision-making process and confirm to you that, yes, this is my process and yes, this process works. What I feel is very interesting for regular podcast listeners, we've had on a guest who talked about something called human design. Now, human design helps you to identify your own personal way of making a decision, and it's different for everybody. I have a gut intuition and I'm also emotionally driven, so I'll have an emotional yes or a no, and then my gut will back that up. Other people, that might not be their decision-making process at all. Some people even have to sleep on it. And in a world that wants you to make a decision now, if you can't, then you're wishy-washy, you're flighty, you're not leadership material, etc. So interesting. And thank you for sharing the information there about the Max Planck Institute. All of this data can help us to find spiritual ways, scientific ways to calibrate our own process. Our life experience helps us to then confirm our own way of doing it. There is no one way, and that's fantastic. Let's go back to this career of yours. Over the last 30 years, you have worked with a huge number of organizations and individuals around the world. Tell us what you've been teaching them, giving to them, showing to them, drawing out of them, shining for them so that they can see. And how has this, in your mind, become your way of doing it, your methodology?
Topic-wise, it's behavioral training. It's about leadership and management, how to deal with people. It's about sales, how to deal with your customers. To give you one example, when I'm a salesperson, what do I want to influence? Do I want to influence a selling process or a buying process? So it's a mindset for me. It's an attitude. Selling process might take a lot of energy. If I'm more on that side of a buying process, this lady, this guy wants to buy something. I'm interested in finding out what he or she wants to buy. I'm interested why, what are the motives behind, and so on and so on. Then it becomes a nice dialogue. I want to help you to fulfill your need. It's not like I do have to do my business. For sure, I do have to do my business. However, this is very much about attitude. The same for me in management. From my point of view, when you are in a management position, you become a leader when your team says, you are my leader. It's not about the title. It's about what you do. It's the same in the military. I mean, I came on board, I was 24 years old. I was a lieutenant. It was clear by my rank, okay, he's boss of part of the organization here. But people had to respect you as a person and your leadership style. It was about integrity and all these things. And same counts for me in management. That's another part. I did this, by the way, internationally. Thank God some of the big, big customers sent me around the world. I love to work with people from different cultures, whether it was India or Asia or Australia. Australia, Great Britain, by the way. And I love that because it's an opportunity to learn. And I would say we always had a win-win situation in training. I always learned a lot from my participants. And this is what I really love about this job. And you receive some money for it, which is nice as well.
With your training, it sounds like 50% of the training is working with the individual, their mindset, their behaviors, their attitudes. And then 50% of it is the skill set of the training that you're there to deliver.
That's absolutely correct. Something like this. For me, I mean, we could have a long discussion about do I have to have the attitude first and then get the skills to improve the way I can live my attitude. Or sometimes I'm convinced I need a skill or a tool that helps me to get there. And I say, okay, look at that. Yeah, it becomes an attitude afterwards. I'm not quite sure about what is what. I think it's a 50-50 somehow.
In your work around the world, were there patterns that you would see came up? What were the major themes you found yourself focusing in on from a mindset or from a skill set point of view?
This is a time management podcast, and this is what I saw in the past a lot, and I even see more today. People seem to be under such a pressure by their jobs that they really, really have a problem how to balance their life. And I mean, a lot of people talk about work-life balance. Personally, I do not like this expression. I call it life balance because, well, work bad, life good. No, it's part of my life and it influences my life. And so this is what I see. Another pattern I can see over the years, I mean, I'm more of this generation, what's in me for it? I worked too much, definitely. Nowadays, and I'm how can I put it? In a way, I'm grateful for that, but younger people think a little bit more about what's in it for me. Yeah? And so I see a tendency there that they are more aware of that and really, really want to have time for themselves, their family, social life, and so on. This is what I really like.
Let's talk a little bit about life purpose and finding your core values. We were introduced to your story at the beginning. Through tragedy, you built a solid foundation that has become who you are and how you do things. What impact has your core values had on how you live your life? If there was one core value that you would like to share with somebody who was coming to the planet for the first time to learn about core values, what would that be for them?
Just one, or is it about values? For me, integrity is definitely one core value. For me as well, respect and humbleness, I would say. It might sound a bit pathetic when talking about this, but when I meet people, no matter which school they were on, what their job is, for me, it's always a natural thinking, I can learn something from this person. So, okay, I have a master degree and so on and so on, but am I better than any other person? No, I'm not. Maybe in my field of expertise, I'm really good. I'm an expert and I'm proud of that. But beyond that, there are so many areas people know more about than I do, so I can learn from them. So respect and humbleness, these were two things I think others, may I say, admired on me. But this is a feedback I received from time to time, whether it was participants or colleagues or partners I work with. I would say these are the core values.
What advice would you give to your younger self about time or career development or about work-life balance?
Looking at my career, trust yourself more, definitely. I always had self-doubts and sometimes too much. Be proud of yourself, definitely, and love yourself. Yeah, those were the three I would mention here.
And from a work-life balance point of view, what advice would you give to your younger self about how much time you spend working, how much time you spend with your family, how much time you spend with your own health and hobbies?
Well, actually, I tried something out last year and it worked out. Interestingly, each month of the year, I blocked 1 week where I said, okay, this 1 week is blocked now. I don't know yet what am I doing there, but I know I will not be in the training delivery, so not travel. It could be work, it could be preparation, it could be talking to customers, whatever it was. So we are talking about 12 weeks I blocked for activities, whatever it is. And it helped me a lot. If possible, try to block time for yourself, not knowing what am I doing there, and keep them blocked. Even if somebody asks you for a meeting, no, sorry, I'm blocked that day.
That is an incredible top tip. I love it. Tell us something that you do with your time that you know most people don't do with their time?
Thinking about it, you might think, no, I'm talking about hours or whatever it is. No, I'm talking about a minute. What do I mean by that? When I finish a task, like an email, I take 30 seconds or a minute to look up, to look out of the window and have this, I'm here. This is where I am right now. I can see the rain or the sun or whatever. I take these 30 seconds, 1 minute, and then I start the next task. Finish one task, take these 30 seconds, feel yourself. Sounds a bit weird maybe, but hey, I'm here, I'm looking out of the window, I can see the birds or trees or whatever it is, and then go back to work.
This is fantastic. I love asking this question because I love hearing this answer for myself more than anything else. I'm hearing there that you are finding your segments of grounded time within the day. You're being present. It's like mini mindfulness moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
You said at the start of this episode that you are retiring. What are your plans for 2024? What does life look like now? What are you going to be focusing on? How are you going to use this next chapter of your life? What are you going to do with it?
Actually, I'm already using it. For me, as a starting point, when you retire, be prepared in terms of what is your hobby? What do you want to do? What would you like to do? And so on. So for example, I started to learn the horse riding. Yeah, for elderly people, not the best sports maybe. And I can tell you sometimes it hurts. However, I started that one because, yeah, I was never in touch before with horses, but somehow this triggered me. And thank God I have a good friend. And this lady, she leads a horse farm. And I work on her farm. So each Friday now, I will be there working on the farm. And for that, she teaches me the horse riding. That's one thing. Another thing is I joined a political party because I think it's definitely important to be organized in any organization, whatever it is, whether it's a political party or whatever it is, to give something back to the world. With my experiences, maybe I can add something to it. Sports, by the way, is another thing. And last but not least, I start my old hobby again, which I unfortunately forgot about my work, which is oil painting. So I'm coming back to that as well. It's becoming busy.
This sounds fantastic. It sounds like, a new lease of life. Before we call this episode complete, Martin, what else would you like to add to this conversation today from a time, from a life, from a balance point of view?
I don't know whether you ever heard the name Bronnie Ware. Bronnie Ware was an US nurse. She worked in a palliative medicine. It is said she found out from people she worked with there, so patients close to leave their lives, the five unrealizable wishes to the past. So it's about these five unrealizable wishes to the past. And I just want to give these five wishes to you because I think it might help, especially younger people, younger than me. And what she wrote down was, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. I wish that I had let myself be happier. And so that was so touching for me, And I thought, hey, gosh, I should have been aware of these five wishes people who were close to death expressed. And maybe it's a good reminder for all of us to have a look at these five things and ask yourself, am I still in balance there? And if not, what am I going to do to put this into balance again?
Thank you so much for sharing this. I truly appreciate your time on this conversation and for everything you've shared with us today.
Thank you very much, Abigail. It was a pleasure and honor for me. Thank you very much.
Before we call this episode complete, where is the best place for people to connect with you?
It will be LinkedIn, I would say. So looking forward to meeting you.
As always, we leave the links in the show notes, so you have no need to fear there. Thank you, Martin, for joining me on the show. It has been a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you.
Until next time, my friends, stay safe, stay well, and don't forget, it's your time. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you loved what you heard, be sure to let me know by leaving a review so I can keep the good stuff coming. Come and say hi on Instagram at Success by Design Training, or visit my website, successbydesigntraining.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. Just search Abigail Barnes. Until next time, don't forget, you are amazing and it's your time.